You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you for having me.
How would you describe what's happening on the stock markets right now?
Still a lot of fear in the market. When you gauge sentiment out there, a lot of uncertainty. You've got the government shutdown. There's all these earnings reports coming out. Some are good, some are bad. We're still in the October time frame. Though I love President Trump in a general manner, day to day, various proclamations and input that we get from the White House just is, you know, it sort of drives you crazy a bit. You know, one day you're hearing the story like we heard earlier today or late yesterday that he was a big supporter. The White House was going to invest in quantum stocks, for example, and then they came out and said they're not going to invest in quantum stocks, and all these stocks were up big earlier in the session today. You know, what the result's going to be, if any, with China and the rare earth discussions affecting, you know, volatility and those shares and metal shares in general. It seems like, you know, story can change very dramatically in, you know, key sectors or stocks that you might be following. So, it's an erratic time frame. On the positive side, the S&P, which I guess is the most general index covering 500 stocks, more or less is hanging closer to its highs, and every time it seems to sell off, it comes back, and my overall model for the year was positive. So it's just a choppy period, and it's almost like, you know, well, if you think it's going to go higher overall, as I do, at least until the end of the year, you know, you just sort of take a vacation. You don't watch the intraday or the choppy action minute to minute, because it is getting a little nutsy here. So, you know, will the government shutdown end? You know, when will it end? Will this be a record-breaking event? Are the implications a lot more negative than, you know, we want to assume? The market seems to assume it's all going to be resolved because the market stays up, but overall stays up. But, you know, there could be a negative surprise here of some kind, too. So, you know, we had a huge advance since April, and, you know, a significant correction or surprise shakeout wouldn't surprise me, though the general seasonality pattern suggests that at least from the end of October forward, it should be a positive time frame. And then, of course, it was a very crazy week for the gold and silver bugs out there. We had that big sell-off in gold, several hundred dollars an ounce, coming supposedly out of the blue. But if you remember the interview we did, not last week, but the week before, I was warning about gold. In fact, we entitled the interview, is there some reason to be concerned about gold? And sure enough, my indicators were warning at that time that we were getting awfully toppy and some type of pullback was coming, and sure enough, it did. It's probably just temporary on a near-term basis, but the numbers were sort of pointing to the fact it was getting overly exuberant and we were due for a little bit of a shakeout. So, like I say, it's sort of a nutsy time here, a lot of crazy stuff going on, a lot of volatility, and I guess if you're trading day to day, it's great. If you're an investor, it could run you up the trees a bit.
What's going on with crude?
Well, I'm still more of a bear. It had a bounce here in the last few days. My model's been saying all year it was going down, as you know, up to just a few days ago, and start to break support, and now sort of bounce back a bit. A lot of geopolitical events could change crude, which I warned about, but we have a little trading position on, and we've had it on and off for months, which is the inverse ETF for crude oil, betting that net-net it should go lower. So I'm sort of sticking with that camp because I think the goal, at least a part of this political administration, is to drive oil prices down, which is good for the economy and inflation, and may not be so great for all the oil companies, but they still seem to make money even with crude oil at these prices. So and still pay some decent dividends. So I'm thinking that our model is still correct, and you know, oil should continue to have net negative price action ahead here over the short term, barring, of course, some dramatic, you know, explosion in the Mideast or something that overproduction or stimulated production in this end of the world can't change. That's obviously the goal, is to produce, to, as they say, drill, baby, drill, you know, try to get as much out there as we can and make our country, North America, independent. So, net, I'm still a little bit bearish on the price.
What's going on with uranium?
Topping out here a little bit. Again, got overdone to the upside, just like gold and silver. You know, sort of blew off here a bit, and now they had a little bit of a correction. Many of the stocks that related to it, you know, just have been going up and up and up and up. So I'm not calling for a bear market or anything. I'm just saying got way overdone, and there are, you know, still in the throes of a little bit of a corrective phase here. So we might have seen, you know, a good part of the move for the year in these stocks because of the huge moves that they've had. And, you know, the whole uranium nuclear business, you know, the whole story that was driving these stocks higher, you know, is not something that is going to be immediately solved. I mean, the production and construction time for a lot of the nuclear facilities, I'm told the earliest is probably 2028 or 2029. And, you know, the prices of these stocks and the energy companies related to it, you know, the Constellation Energy and others like that, may have anticipated things that are not happening so soon, you know what I mean? So I'd be taking profits in these things. I mean, they've had, if you haven't already, I just think they've had a huge move. They anticipate a great deal into the future. And the real future, as I mentioned, could be a few years away until they're actually up and running. So, I'm not going to short them, but I would definitely look to exit. I think it's a little too much too fast.
Do you think the new U.S. sanctions on Russia will up energy prices?
Well, maybe that's why crude oil upticked here a little bit. You know, Trump put these sanctions on. You know, you really don't know because you got so many participants in the world, you know, that are buying, selling crude oil from all different places. And, you know, if the BRIC nations, you know, are really that strong and stay together, you know, and a lot of the exports, like for Iran, for example, go to China and, you know, that type of thing. You know, you wonder what impact, you know, the sanctions that Trump has imposed really will have. So the market seems to respond bullishly short term, but I'm not so sure. We have, unfortunately, a lot of enemies out there and a lot of competing countries and anti-dollar and anti-U.S. sentiments around the world. So I don't think Putin's going to go broke over this. I mean, they're hoping that he does, so he stops the Ukraine war. But, you know, he's got a lot of other, you know, customers out there that still want his stuff. And, you know, and even at these prices, you know, he still makes money. I mean, I think they control most of the crude oil in the world. So I'm not too impressed that what Trump did is going to change anything with regard to Ukraine or Putin. I think there are other factors involved here besides just these sanctions. I'm not a neocon. I'm not looking for more war or sending more weapons or anything like that. But I don't know if this was the solution. This, the mentality seems to be, you know, cut off the bank accounts, cut off the supply of income, and that's going to change things. But, you know, Putin and Russia is a big place, and they have a lot of other resources for making money and potentially a lot of other customers out there. So time will tell. I'm not holding my breath here for the Ukraine situation to be settled or Trump's plan to work.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's happening on the cryptocurrency front?
Well, we took it on the chin there, as we call it, in the last couple of weeks. We had a big sell-off after a huge move to new highs in at least Bitcoin, you know, and it's been floundering here a little bit. And, you know, we're still in a cyclical time frame where you could still get another run here into the end of the year or early next year. So I'm not ready to throw in the towel quite yet. I think, you know, the future for crypto is bright, government legislation favoring it. But, you know, things could take time, and it could be a year from now before the big, big moves that a lot of people have been talking and hoping, you know, unfold. So, you know, many of the other cryptos sort of underperformed Bitcoin when it went to a new record of 126,000 here in the last few weeks. Many of the other cryptos were nowhere near their highs. So it was a little bit of a negative divergence, I guess, technically. And, you know, when we originally were talking about these crypto plays, and we've been talking about this for a good part of a year, year and a half, I did mention that, you know, a lot of this could carry into mid-2026, and there still was a lot of pending legislation out there, and the implementation of, you know, the Bitcoin reserve and the crypto reserve and a lot of things that still need to be done. So there's still a lot of mechanics that still haven't taken place. And, of course, you know, you got Congress, you know, freezing the budget now, and the debt going on, and when, you know, nothing is getting done in Congress, you know, when something like this happens, and that could be delaying legislation, other things related to crypto. And, you know, again, this could stretch well into the middle part of next year or beyond in terms of the impact on crypto. So I'm not a bear, but I would say I'm a little disappointed in the action of other cryptos as a trader, as compared to what Bitcoin did here in the last few weeks. So obviously, if everything turns here into year end, I'll have to rethink that. But at the moment, I'm trying to stay optimistic, but more on a longer term basis rather than short term here, unless the market proves itself to the upside.
Anything happening on the cannabis front?
Cannabis has been quiet. It's been quiet. It's been trying to rally, and it's been faltering here a little bit. A lot of it is just hanging on, you know, what Donald Trump said, you know, a few weeks ago about supporting, you know, rescheduling cannabis and CBD and all that cool stuff. And, you know, that, of course, didn't take into consideration the Banking Act issues and so forth that it needs to go on and hasn't happened. And of course, that's not going to happen with the state of Congress right now for sure. And they couldn't get this done in the last few years. So to think they're going to pull that off right now is sort of crazy, right? So, yeah, it seems to be on a little bit of a, you know, holding pattern right here. They had some big moves, as you probably know. They had some big percentage gains. I keep citing, for example, the example with Tilray, a little, you know, big, we used to be the big Canadian cannabis stock, going from 30 cents up to $1.50, $1.60, which, you know, is still, you know, garbage type prices. It's not high quality stocks, but you that type of percentage play, you know, we saw it somewhat in many of the other names following the Donald Trump comments. So a lot of it is probably, you know, anticipating a bit too much into the future, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. So I guess it needs more news. Something's got to happen besides Donald Trump supporting the concept. So we'll have to see what other news comes out, whether cannabis indeed gets rescheduled, whether the Banking Act finds progress in Congress next year, and so forth and so on. So, you know, we have our positions on. We do have the cannabis, we call it the Canna Sector Letter, so people want to subscribe to that. You can see our portfolio, and we're hanging in there because overall they're cheap compared to where they've been. And there's still business being done in the industry. It's not like all these cannabis companies out there are going broke. Many are generating nice cash flow, particularly, you know, in the states here in the states in U.S. where it's legal. And what we really need is that national law, you know, legalizing it across the board, which you have in Canada, which we didn't really get here in the U.S. So when and if that comes, and it will come at some point, the stock should do better. So I guess, you know, being in an index like there's one ETF, ticker symbol MJ, for example, which is a combination of, you know, many of the big names, is probably the safest way to take a look at that industry where you have some diversification.
This headline just came in. Just 3 years after Canada called China a disruptive global power, Foreign Affairs Minister Anita announces Canada now views Beijing as a strategic partner in a dangerous world. Is this the result of the tariff wars and the tariffs the U.S. has imposed on Canada?
You know, China is really our enemy. You know, we try to think of them as our friends because we've done so many business deals with them for so many years. But, you know, in the area of rare earths, for example, controlling the 80% of the world supply and using that as leverage in terms of, you know, negotiations with us when it affects our technology and our military industries is really a serious situation. And, you know, we put ourselves into it. I mean, you know, it's our own stupidity when you think about it, how we relied so much on a foreign country or foreign location to support, you know, critical needs for our country. And, you know, there are stories out there, you know, China really ultimately, you know, wants to, take over the world, take over the U.S. and Canada. There's a story this past week questioning whether, if you recall, the Amazon AWS outage that we had during the week. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but it was a big outage. It affected caused hundreds of billions of dollars in damage. What AWS is the Amazon Web Services, and when it failed, in fact, I actually had a conference call that morning, and I think it was Monday or Tuesday morning when it happened, and Zoom, which is your, you know, telecommunications visual device, wasn't working. We couldn't do a connection, and you know, we had heard that communication services on Wall Street and many places had gone down. So the speculation that China have something to do with this outage, was it a prelude to you know, other attacks that they might be inflicting on us? And of course, it's a speculation, but, you know, wars take different shapes and forms, and, you know, you don't have to send a nuclear bomb this way to put us out of business. You know, if they can do stuff like that, and you know, there's reasonable speculation that maybe China had something to do with it. There was, you know, there's, what's his name, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. He was one of Donald Trump's former national security advisors. He believes that China is preparing for some type of war. He came out with a quote this past week, and whether it's a technological war or more aggressive one. So his AW crash really, crippled some platforms out there. Coinbase, for example, which is in the crypto area, for example, was shut down, I believe, for a while. So there's a lot of, some blackouts in other places around the world that we can talk about. Here's, I actually cite all these examples in my newsletter. So for those who subscribe, I go into much more detail than we're doing during this interview. So I'm sort of affirming in a general way that we have a lot to worry about with China.
Anything on the geocosmic front we have to keep an eye on?
Well, if you remember the story in the last few weeks, this Atlas comet that Avi Loeb, who is the Harvard chief astronomer and space scientist, who's been a big follower of extraterrestrial anomalies in the galaxy or in our solar system, and he's very credible, and Oumuamua, whatever it was, we want to call it, a craft or a piece of rock that went through our solar system a few years ago and violated all the laws of gravity and whatever, and with the speculation that it was a intergalactic vehicle of some kind that was passing through the solar system. And this is all through the Harvard studies. This is just not me talking through my head here. So apparently this Atlas comet, which is now apparently was not visible, supposedly it was going behind the sun and supposed to come back around, but apparently somebody took a picture of it and they posted it on spaceweather.com. So we're supposed to get more information on it toward the end of the year, I believe. But you know, there's a lot of speculation. Is this some type of, you know, intergalactic vehicle of some kind that's checking out our solar system, not just a comet that we, that we normally see, because it's violating some of the geocosmic rules and the way it's acting and some measurements about the content of it and the light waves that have been given out and the supposed unusual metals that it contains, you know, don't fit the formula, so to speak. So, you know, I talk a lot about this stuff. It's just fun stuff out there, but people just sort of dismiss it, though. So who cares if the comet is intergalactic? I'm just worried whether my stocks are up or down today. You know, it's that type of mentality, which is not one that I share, as you know. So I try to give some merit to these, but a lot of other interesting stuff going out there, and this is what I guess the most current discussion is when you check what's going on. There's also another comet out there called Comet Lemon. This is more of a normal comet. So apparently on October 21st, it's going to have its closest approach to the Earth. So we're already at, you know, right here now, and it's right there. So if you can look up, you should see Comet Lemon floating out there somewhere. I'm up. Exactly sure what part of the sky you're supposed to look at. If you go to spaceweather.com, you could probably look up the exact coordinates that you can take a view of it. So that's sort of the, you know, story right there with regard to the most interesting stories. I did post some other stories on the website too this week, and this gets into the more esoteric aspects of the whole geocosmic story. There was a, this is actually a couple, 3 years old, but I posted an interview with Joe Rogan with Mr. Lazar, who is the fellow who supposedly disclosed the existence of Area 51 back in the 90s when the government was denying that it even existed. And it's an hour-long interview with Joe Rogan, who, as you know, is one of the premier interviewers in North America. And he did a big interview with Bob Lazar, and it's really, you know, it's on my, posted on my website. If you can take the hour, it's really extraordinary the stuff he discusses regarding the Area 51. Apparently, he had worked there. The things he saw, and I don't want to get into too many details because people will just hang up this interview and think that they're listening to a science fiction, a little watching a science fiction movie, but it borders on that when you listen to what he tells Joe Rogan during this interview. So I just was compelled to post this on the website because I've been, as many of our listeners who are open-minded know, this is a story that's been going on for decades, and there's much stuff that we haven't been told. So that sort of borders on your question about geocosmics. So I did want to mention that.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR Newsletters. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.